Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com. Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm Saul Gonzalez in Los Angeles. We begin in San Bernardino County, where a sheriff's deputy has died in the line of duty. San Bernardino County Sheriff John McMahon made the announcement late last night.
It's my sad duty to report that despite the heroic life-saving measures of the staff at the hospital, Sergeant Dominic Baca, 43 years old and 17-year veteran of the Sheriff's Department, has succumbed to his injuries.
McMahon says yesterday afternoon, sheriff deputies spotted a motorcyclist without a license plate in the community of Yucca Valley. When they attempted to pull him over, he drove off, leading to a high-speed chase. They later found the motorcycle abandoned, which is when investigators say the motorcyclist opened fire on the responding deputies, hitting Sergeant Vaca. Deputies returned fire, killing the suspect. In recent years, Californians have debated whether or not to change the names of places because of their historically racist associations. The ski resort of Squaw Valley, for instance, is changing its name because Squaw is a derogatory term for Native Americans. The Northern California town of Fort Bragg considered changing its name because it was named for a general who fought for the Confederacy, but decided not to. The California Report's Keith Mizuguchi spoke with the Los Angeles Times reporter Brittany Mejia about the latest of these debates. In the rural Sierra County town of Downeyville, about 100 miles from Sacramento, all over one specific name.
Jim Crow Road, Jim Crow Canyon, Jim Crow Creek, they're all named after this miner, or said to be named after this miner, who, you know, found a lot of gold. Some people say he discovered the canyon. There's pretty much really mixed reviews about who this man was, what his name was, and just his story in general.
And so for many of the property owners who live on this road or in this area, I imagine, you know, a lot of the social outrage over names is sort of fueling their fight.
Yes, definitely. I feel like if you look at what's happening across the country and what's been happening, especially in the last year or so, you know, names getting changed or things, you know, and that's, it's just a classic example that's playing out in this small town. And, you know, but the residents there or the property owners, there's like four of them who brought it to the county supervisor. And they were like, you know, it's time we changed the name. And one of the places on the road is actually a resort. And so they have people booking rooms and they're, you know, obviously really offended by the name. They even made the point where it's like, you know, within this last years or so, like it's worse. Like, and it makes sense. I mean, there's more sensitivity about things like this.
As is the case in most of these situations where there is the possibility of renaming, there is debate and there is other opinions. Not everyone necessarily agrees with removing the name, correct?
Right, exactly. I think what's been coming up here is people kind of bemoaning woke cancel culture. When this first came before the County Board of Supervisors in April, I mean, all the letters that were written in were about cancel culture and were people complaining and saying, you know, we can't let cancel culture take over our community. And, you know, one of the residents in Downeyville actually like did a Facebook post and it got like over 100 or at least 100 comments. And it was just people arguing back and forth, you know, on one side saying, you know, that we can't just get rid of everything, get rid of our history. And those on the other side saying, no, like we have to change with the times and be more sensitive, especially now.
And important to note, you know, you hear a lot about this in bigger cities, you know, San Francisco, Oakland, Los Angeles. But this is popping up more and more in rural parts of the state as well, correct?
Right, exactly. I mean, that's what's interesting to note as well. It's kind of similar to what's just kind of been popping up elsewhere. And the reaction is very different maybe than what you would find in a place like Los Angeles or San Francisco.
That was Brittany Mejia, LA Times Metro reporter. Brittany, thanks so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
The Sierra County Board of Supervisors is holding a public hearing on the renaming of Jim Crow Road later this morning. And later today, Governor Gavin Newsom will join Secretary of State Shirley Weber and Attorney General Rob Bonta at a virtual event to mark the inaugural convening of California's first-in-the-nation statewide reparations task force. The launch coincides with another historic event that's also spurring calls for reparations, the 100-year anniversary of the Tulsa Massacre. KQED's Holly J. McDeed reports Oakland Congresswoman Barbara Lee was among the officials in Tulsa this week.
Lee visited Tulsa, Oklahoma on Monday to commemorate the massacre where a mob of white people killed hundreds of black residents in the Greenwood district known as Black Wall Street. She met with Viola Fletcher and her brother, two of the few people who lived through the massacre still alive today. Lee says all survivors and their descendants need to be made whole.
And never, ever have those survivors and descendants been compensated, the damage has not been repaired. And it's a shame and disgrace that this country has allowed what has happened in Greenwood, Oklahoma, to be swept under the rug.
And she says that history needs to be told, in spite of several states recently passing laws limiting how racism is discussed in schools. For the California Report, I'm Holly J. McDeed.
107-year-old Viola Fletcher worked as an assistant welder in California shipyards during World War II before moving back to Oklahoma. Late last month, she testified before Congress in support of reparations. And finally, a couple of weeks ago, we told you about an effort to recall 3 out of 5 county supervisors in Northern California's Shasta County because they supported the state's efforts to control the spread of COVID-19 by closing schools and businesses. Now the county's Registrar of Voters says a special election could cost Shasta County up to $640,000. The recall campaign is being pushed by conservative activists who critics have called right-wing militants and conspiracy theorists. Meanwhile, recall supporters claim they're being intimidated by the Shasta County District Attorney's Office, which they say has sent investigators to their office to make sure the recall effort is being conducted in a legal manner. And now let's turn to the pandemic. In Los Angeles, black residents are getting sick and dying from COVID at a higher rate than any other race or ethnicity. KPCC's Jackie Fortier reports.
Black Angelenos have lagged behind in vaccinations, but they've never had more COVID cases or deaths. LA County Public Health Director Barbara Ferrer said for months that Latinos had been hit the hardest, including during the winter surge.
This is a change, and again, rates are very low in all of our communities, but we have the lowest vaccination coverage amongst blacks, African Americans throughout the county than we do when compared to all our other communities. I would say that this is largely the biggest contributing factor, yes.
Ferrer said 40% of black residents over the age of 16 have been vaccinated. That's an improvement since April, but it's still below other ethnic and racial groups. LA County has a very low case rate, but with restrictions lifting on June 15th, Ferrer said the health department will work to counter harmful vaccine myths by working with community leaders. Large-scale vaccine sites are being phased out in favor of smaller, more targeted mobile teams. For the California Report, I'm Jackie Fortier in Los Angeles.
Meanwhile, in the Bay Area, businesses in Santa Clara County have until today to collect information on their employees' COVID vaccination status. This is part of the county's latest health order issued just a few weeks ago, which took many businesses by surprise. But speaking to the Silicon Valley organization recently, Assistant County Counsel Tony Lopresi tried to clear up some of the confusion.
This is not a requirement that everybody get vaccinated. There's nothing in the order that says all personnel must get vaccinated. So it's not a requirement that businesses disclose to the broader workforce or the public who is and who is not vaccinated.
Because employers don't have to report this information to the public health department, many are questioning why it's even necessary in the first place. County Council James Williams says it's because there are different rules for those who are vaccinated and those who aren't. Workplaces in Santa Clara County could face a fine of up to $5,000 a day if they're not in compliance with the health order. But Williams says the goal isn't enforcement, but rather for owners to act in good faith. Let's turn to housing. California's eviction moratorium put in place because of the pandemic is slated to end on June 30th. Meanwhile, the state's rental aid program has gotten off to a slow start. Tenant advocates say that could put renters across the state at risk of eviction. KQED's Molly Solomon has more.
less than 2% of federal rent relief has actually gotten into the pockets of California's struggling renters and landlords. That means just $20 million has been paid out of $1.4 billion available. Francisco Duenas is the head of Housing Now, a coalition of advocacy groups.
We cannot open up the floodgates for further evictions when rent relief has not reached and had not had its impact.
His group and others surveyed 177 organizations who are helping tenants apply for rent aid and found lots of problems. Gen Fujioka is doing outreach with renters through the San Francisco Anti-Displacement Coalition.
Many, many applied or attempted to apply, but the vast majority of those people who began the application process did not complete it because the application process itself was very daunting.
The survey also found some people didn't have access to the documents they need, like a lease or pay stubs. Technology was also a barrier. Some tenants didn't have internet access or struggled to upload all of their documents.
I'm pretty tech savvy, and it took me 2 weeks.
Jalen Bailey lives in Pasadena and works as a writer for film and television. Freelance jobs dried up during the pandemic, and now she owes $30,000 in back rent. She says her landlord has sent her an eviction notice despite the current moratorium.
The physical and emotional toll of this is very difficult to express. It is overwhelming because of its duration and the sense of isolation.
Los Angeles County has approved her application, but it's on hold until her landlord submits their information. And she doesn't know if they're going to do that.
We don't know where we are in the system. There's just been no communication.
The state is working to streamline the application and require less documentation. But tenant groups say time is running out and say it would be catastrophic to let eviction moratoriums expire before relief reaches the people who need it the most. For the California Report, I'm Molly Solomon.
And finally this morning, a bipartisan group of state lawmakers is asking California's Attorney General to review expenditures of a fire victim trust. It's charged with distributing billions of dollars to Pacific Gas and Electric fire victims. The legislators' request comes after a KQED investigation into the trust's overhead expenses. My California Report co-host Lily Jamali joins us now with more. Lily?
Hi, Saul. This letter to Attorney General Rob Bonta was signed by almost a dozen state lawmakers. All of them represent communities burned by fires sparked by PG&E equipment, including in Napa, Sonoma, and Butte counties. They're asking for a review of the Fire Victim Trust's expenditures. And as we've been reporting, the trust spent $51 million on overhead in its first year, while just $7 million went to fire victims during that time. Now, we know that the pace of payments has picked up, with $250 million going to fire victims so far this year. But that's still just a tiny fraction of the billions of dollars that were promised. State Senator Mike McGuire represents Sonoma County, which was hit hard by the 2017 North Bay firestorm.
We firmly believe that these dollars should have flowed quicker, and we hope that we can work with the Attorney General's office to force the trustees' hands to move with speed and get caught up with these payments.
The Attorney General's office said it's unable to comment on any potential investigations. The trustee also declined to comment. Meantime, most of the 70,000 fire victims promised help are still waiting for it.
That was the California Report's Lily Jamali. And that is our show for Tuesday, June 1st. We're a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Saul Gonzalez. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day and talk tomorrow.
Support for the California Report comes from Eric and Wendy Schmidt through the Schmidt Family Foundation, working together to create a just world where all people have access to renewable energy, clean air and water, and healthy food, on the web at theschmidt.org. The law firm Perkins Coie, a trusted legal advisor to innovative companies and industry leaders throughout California and the world. Learn more at perkinscoie.com. And Blue Shield of California, closing the healthcare gap since 1939. Learn more about their commitment to quality and fair healthcare for every Californian at news.blueshieldca.com.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.